Lindsay and I were sitting at the computer at my house one night shortly after my initial diagnosis. I cannot even begin to tell you how my heart hurt for my youngest brother. I was like, Uncle Billy is so sick and Uncle Tommy is the only one left. And if I die too, he'll be the only one here. And I was crying and I just kept saying, Uncle Tom, poor Uncle Tom, if I don't survive this. And Lindsay was saying, Mom, that's not going to happen. You're going to survive. You know, everything is going to be okay.
Hello and welcome to The Paul Garcia Show, a show about the remarkable people of Central Illinois. I'm your host, Paul Garcia, and I invite you to join me as I speak with these individuals about their stories, the lessons they've learned, and the knowledge they've gained along the way. Tune in every Sunday to witness the power of bringing each new individual's unique journey into the spotlight. Nancy Woodlackey, thank you very much for coming on to the show today. I appreciate it a lot.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. So, Nancy, you are the city clerk for the city of Fairbury. You are also the zoning administrator, as well as a few other things.
Correct.
Additionally, you are also the mother of three wonderful children, one of whom was a really good childhood friend of mine. And you are also a breast cancer survivor, which will be the primary topic of our conversation today. Okay. So, real quick, am I missing any other titles, important life titles?
No, those are all true, and that's about it.
All right, sounds good. So, we're talking about your breast cancer experience today, mm-hmm. and I'd just like to start things off kind of from the beginning. When did you first start to notice some things with your health that were alarming and that you should maybe seek medical attention?
So I had no outward symptoms, but in July of 2017, during like a self-check, which women are encouraged to do, I noticed a lump in my right breast. And it was kind of large. And so I just kept an eye on it for a little bit. Later in the month, I had to go back to see a surgeon, my gynecological surgeon, because she had done a procedure on me in June. So I went for my 6-week checkup then. And I asked her if she could write a script to have my mammogram done. So fast forward to August then of 2017, had the mammogram, and the report came back that there was suspicion in there and needed more testing.
So really quick, for dum-dums like me, what is a mammogram? I roughly know what it is, but maybe you can explain it a little better.
Okay, so a mammogram is a medical procedure invented by men. It has to be, because it's horrible. It's terribly painful, but it's a necessary evil in a woman's life. The radiologist or mammogram person, you go into a device that basically squishes each breast like as hard as it can, because it's trying to get in there to pick up any abnormalities that may be inside the tissue in there.
Wow.
And they do that on both sides. And then they tell you not to breathe while you're being squished. So that's what it is.
I've heard my sister describe what that is.
Yeah.
And I thought she was exaggerating it.
No.
It sounds like exactly how she said it. I feel kind of
exactly
bad now. It's
exactly like that, yes.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
You get that done. And that's when they say, hey, we noticed a little bit of an abnormality. Was it a dense part of the breast tissue or something that they noticed?
So back then, after the radiologist reads the scans, they had a report called a BI-RADS report, B-I-R-A-D-S. I don't know if that's still in existence today or not, but the higher you score on that report, the more likely maybe you are to develop breast cancer.
Okay.
Maybe at that time, maybe in the future. It's a scale of 5 or 6, and I scored a 4 on that. So it was a little concerning, but I just did what I was told to do and went from there.
So when you did your own examination at home, was there any part of you that was hesitant or fearful of going to the doctors in the first place for fear of the diagnosis that you might get? Were you scared to go to the doctor and find out?
No, not at that time. I had been doctoring since May for a couple of issues, and it was just another appointment for me at that point in time.
Okay.
So the recommendation on this BI-RADS report was a surgical consult. Okay. So I found a surgeon, Dr. John Wieland was my surgeon. Shout out to Dr. Wieland, best surgeon ever. So I made the appointment. I was bummed. I didn't realize I was going to have a consultation with him at my initial visit. I thought that visit was going to be to schedule surgery, but no, sadly. Mm-hmm. It was so that he could meet me, get a history, show him the area that was in question. He already had the mammogram report. And oddly enough, before that visit with Dr. Wieland, I had nipple discharge on the right side, and it was kind of a bloody
discharge.
Yes. And so at that appointment then with Dr. Wieland, he could feel the mass that I was feeling, but he was very quick to say, I think it's this, and I think it's this, and it's not a big deal. And then he was reading the report. He said, well, there's some nipple discharge. Can you make that happen again? And so I was able to. So he put that discharge on a slide and sent that off for testing. So now fast forward to September 5th of 2017. I was in being processed or prepared, whatever, for that biopsy. He, at that same time when I was being prepared, he got the results from that nipple discharge. Mm. And it was malignant for breast cancer.
Okay.
So all the work that we had done in the radiological department, placing the guide wire for the biopsy and things, was irrelevant. It didn't need to happen.
Oh, placing the guide wire. Mm-hmm. What exactly does that mean?
So Dr. Wieland needed a guide that day to get to the part where the mammogram report told him there was suspicious matter. So that's what the radiology department was doing. They were placing that guide wire for Dr. Wieland so that he could find exactly where he needed to focus his surgical instruments on.
Oh, I see. So it's literally a line that goes to the right spot.
Yep. I had a little styrofoam coffee cup sticking off this guide wire, and the guide wire was sticking out, and back down the hall I went and ready to go in and have the biopsy done. And he came in and said, we're not doing that today.
Wow. Okay. So then what did he say that you were going to do today?
So he came in, and Stevie's girlfriend, Demi, was with me on that appointment. She was off work that day. I was going to have a ride home.
And Stevie is your son?
Yes, my middle child. Dr. Wieland came into my holding room after I had the guide wire placed and after he had gotten the results of the slide report. And he said, I did not see this coming. He was shocked. He really thought I had a plugged milk duct and he was going to go in and rot it out, basically. Mm-hmm. And there was something else that he thought might be a problem, and which involved removing the nipple a little bit and doing like a cleansing there also, and then reattach it, and I would be on my way and everything would be fine. Mm-hmm. That was not the case. And he said, your nipple discharge is positive for malignancy. You have breast cancer.
He said basically those words exactly?
Yes.
And Demi was in the room with you, or is it just you?
Demi was in the room with me. I said, okay. And he said, you're going to have chemo and you're going to lose your hair and might have to have radiation, and we don't know what kind it is, but we're going to work to figure it out. But today we're not going to do a procedure for you. And at this point, Dem had grabbed my hand because the tears were just kind of coming out of my eyes, flowing down my face. It wasn't what I was expecting. I was not expecting a breast cancer diagnosis at all.
We are brought to you by Fairbury Furniture. Fairbury Furniture is the area's favorite furniture store. Their selection is huge, their staff is helpful and friendly, and they have all of your favorite brands of mattresses, tables, chairs, recliners, couches, and basically all furniture items. So make your home comfy, stylish, and delightful when you shop at Fairbury's own Fairbury Furniture.
Nobody in my family has had breast cancer.
No one, really?
Nobody.
Oh my.
Nobody. There's a lot of lung cancer in my family, but never breast cancer. So it was a surprise.
What emotions ran through your head? That had to hit you like a ton of bricks, I would imagine, right? When he said those words that you have breast cancer?
Yeah.
What went through your head? What did you immediately start thinking?
Well, there's a little bit of a backstory there.
Okay.
August 1st, so my diagnosis was on September 5th. My brother was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer on August 1st.
Okay.
So like 34 days
earlier. Did you say stage 4?
Yes.
Okay. That's like, isn't that the highest stage?
Yes.
Okay. Oh my
yeah.
gosh.
So he was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer on August 1st. And then I was diagnosed with breast cancer on September 5th. So they were back to back. There are three of us kids in my family. My parents are gone. And honestly, my immediate thought upon hearing I had breast cancer was for my youngest brother. I did not want to leave him orphaned. My children, I knew would be fine because they have a lot of family. They have a lot of aunts and uncles and their dad is here. And so if I died, I knew they would be okay. They would be fine. But if my brother and I both died of cancer, that would leave my youngest brother by himself in this world. And it broke my heart. Broke my heart.
Wow.
That's who I thought of that day.
Holy cow. That went through your head probably in that room?
Yeah, it did.
Jeez.
And having to tell him, I did not want to have to tell him. I did not want to have to tell him that I was diagnosed also.
What do you think his reaction would have? Well, what was his reaction? Because obviously you told him pretty soon after that.
I did. I told my children first. We went home then. Well, there's more that happened that day. But by the time we got home, I had already called my kids and told them to please gather at the house that we needed to have a sit down. I mean, I just said I was diagnosed with breast cancer today and these are the next steps and this is what has to happen now.
How did they react? Was it Lindsay, Stevie, and Simon all in the room?
Yes. And Demi. I don't think Jordan was there. We met at Lindsay's house. I don't remember Jordan being there at that time. Jordan is Lindsay's boyfriend.
Okay.
Jordan Roy. I don't remember Jordan being there at that time, but I remember Demi being there because she was my driver that day. So when we got back to town, we went straight to Lindsay's and waited for the kids to get there.
And what was their reaction?
A lot like mine. Not a lot of words. More kind of soaking it in and some tears. And then after that simmers for a moment and you have a couple minutes to realize what was just revealed, then the questions started to come.
After this initial whirlwind, 24 hours, probably 48 hours, because it probably carried over to the next day.
Yeah.
Once the initial sting kind of settles a little bit, where does your mind go then after that? Or do you fall into like a depression? Are you angry at God? Or are you motivated and thinking about what's next and how you're going to get through this?
I remember being motivated and doing whatever I had to do to make this go away. All I kept thinking about was my brother. Mm-hmm. I can remember Dr. Whelan had recommended two or three oncologists, and he wanted me to choose one. And so Lindsay and I were sitting at the computer at my house one night shortly after my initial diagnosis, reading bios on these oncologists' mm-hmm. website pages. And I was crying and I just kept saying, Uncle Tom, poor Uncle Tom, if I don't survive this. And Lindsay was saying, Mom, that's not going to happen. You're going to survive. You know, everything is going to be okay. I was like, Uncle Billy is so sick and Uncle Tommy is the only one left. And if I die too, he'll be the only one here. And so he was, I cannot even begin to tell you how my heart hurt for my youngest brother.
You seem like you're incredibly family oriented. You care an awful lot about your brothers even, and of course your kids. Is that accurate? Are you very family oriented?
Family is everything to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when you have breast cancer or any kind of cancer, this is my rough understanding of it, you have a few options as to what kind of treatment you undergo. You have chemotherapy, you have radiation therapy, you even have surgery, hormone therapy. In your position, was it kind of your choice which treatment to go through with?
Yeah, so it depends on what kind of breast cancer you have. That is the motivating factor that drives your treatment plan. Dr. Whelan had given me a list of three oncologists, and the one that he really wanted me to choose was always busy. He was always booked, and he didn't have any hope of me being able to get into him in a timely fashion.
Wow.
So we focused on these other two, and I kind of decided on the one. And then Dr. Whelan called with my pathology and from the MRI and told me how large my tumor was at that point in time. It was 9.4 centimeters on that day, on September 5th. It was huge. It was really big.
How big is that? That's bigger than a grape. That's almost like golf ball, isn't it?
It's quite large. I mean, I can tell you from where I felt it end to end, but I don't know what that measurement is. But it was large.
Yeah.
So, but then he also told me, the oncologist that he really wants me to see, Dr. Whelan called him and presented my case to him, and he agreed to get me in immediately. And so I did end up seeing Dr. John Migas at the cancer center. So he was my medical oncologist. By the time everything came back, we determined that I had DCIS, which is ductal carcinoma in situ. If you're going to have a breast cancer, that is the best type of breast cancer to have.
Okay.
Okay.
We are brought to you by Once and Again in Pontiac and Fairbury. Once and Again is a remarkable resale shop that sells and consigns pre-owned name brand clothing and shoes for your entire family. This year they celebrate 20 years of business serving our local community and beyond. Once and Again also has a great selection of pre-owned, authentic designer handbags without the designer price tag. Once and Again has an ever-changing inventory of name brands and their spacious locations in both Fairbury and Pontiac. Along with their tag color clearance system, shopper rewards, and other promotions, they have prices that will fit any budget. Once and Again is open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And you can shop online too at onceandagain.com. That's O-N-C-E, the letter N, A-G-A-I-N.com. For more information about consignment or brands or for directions to their stores, you can again visit onceandagain.com. That's letter N, not the word and. Once again, that's Once and Again, a consignment and resale shop located in Fairbury and Pontiac, Illinois.
It's contained within the milk ducts, and typically a lumpectomy or a mastectomy can really oftentimes be the only course of treatment required. So a lumpectomy is where they go into the breast tissue and they are able to remove the lump and however much tissue they need to in order to get clear margins. They need to have 2 millimeters of clear margins in order to be safe. So they choose to do the lumpectomy if they can retain a good amount of the breast left. In my case, that wasn't going to be an option.
because number it was one, too big?
Because it was too large. And then number two, because I didn't have any clear margins. It was so large. When I went to see, and it wasn't just me. When I say when I went to see, it was all three of my children and myself.
Oh, wow.
We traveled in a pack at this time. We went to see Dr. Migas on my appointment day, and his initial thought was that he wanted to reduce the size of the tumor with chemotherapy prior to removing it.
Okay.
Because it was so large. He was confident my breast cancer was secondary to either lung cancer or colon cancer.
Secondary to it. Does that mean that it's in addition to those?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. That would be tough news.
Yeah. Because of the size of it and having no breast cancer history in my family, he really was confident that there was an initial source other than the breast, namely either lung or colon. And I said, well, my brother was just diagnosed with lung cancer. Like a month before. So that was a scary time waiting to find out if I had lung cancer.
What's that like when you suddenly realize that you have this new risk, like you could potentially have it even worse than you already have it? What was that moment like? It was like, come on, life, well, give me a break.
Yes and no. The most frustrating part about the initial diagnosing time was that my insurance company would not allow me to have a PET scan, which is a full body scan.
Okay.
And that would basically light up any other cancerous spots or tumors in your body.
They wouldn't let you have that? They wouldn't pay for that? Oh my gosh.
No, they would not approve the expense. And we fought. And
why would they not do that? That's terrible.
Yeah. They just said it wasn't necessary. I mean, Dr. Migas even appealed their initial decision, and they still denied the PET scan. So we went forward with the DCIS diagnosis. So my DCIS, you can either be graded 1, 2, or 3. I was a DCIS nuclear grade 3,
okay,
which had zero clear margins on the right. The left side did not pick up any cancer cells in the MRI. And there was no biopsy scheduled for the left side. So we thought the left side was perfectly fine. With no clear margins on the right side, it meant a mastectomy. A lumpectomy was no longer an option for me. I was going to have a mastectomy.
Okay. What's a mastectomy?
A mastectomy is the removal of the entire breast tissue area and sometimes more.
Does that basically mean breast removal?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And just one or?
At that point in time, yes. We were just focusing on the right.
So you're just focusing on the right. And that's kind of the course of action you're planning on taking. You're planning on taking your whole right breast, removing that. Am I correct?
Yes.
That had to be, was that at all a tough decision for you?
Oh, not at all.
Not at all?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Living with breast cancer is not an option for me.
Okay.
Because it will spread eventually.
The decision to have your right breast removed is not a difficult decision.
Oh, not at all.
That's very interesting to me. I mean, I understand it's like, okay, this breast cancer that has the potential to kill me or remove my right breast and pretty much eliminate that risk at all.
Yeah.
But still, forgive me if this sounds a little insensitive, but I would imagine that removing your breast or maybe even your breasts as a woman, not only are you losing a large part of your physical body that you've lived with your entire life, but it's also almost a part of your womanhood.
Yeah.
I would think that'd be a tough decision for a woman to make. Like it might be, but it wasn't the case for you.
No. Absolutely, you are spot on.
Okay.
To have to have your breasts removed, probably for any reason, is a little unnerving for women, I would say. It's part of who we are. I mean, that's how God made us, right?
Exactly.
However, at 52 years old, I was finished bringing forth life. I wasn't going to be nursing any more babies. Mm-hmm. They were there because God put them there. That's part of it. Making the decision to have the mastectomy was easy. Making the decision to have reconstruction, on the other hand, was not so easy. So when you are diagnosed with breast cancer and you find out you have to have mastectomy, either a single or a double, you do have the option of choosing reconstructive surgery or prosthetics or nothing. I chose reconstruction.
We are brought to you by Connections of Fairview Haven. You can probably think of someone right now who could use a little assistance in their daily lives at home, whether that be because of their age, mobility issues, their weight, or maybe they think that going out during these times is a little too risky for them. They may need assistance with bathing, taking their medication, running errands, getting groceries, or who knows what else. This is where my friends at Connections of Fairview Haven come in. Connections of Fairview Haven is a licensed home service agency that provides tons of different non-medical services for you or your loved one in the comfort, privacy, and safety of your own home. They will literally come to your place of residence and help with almost any of the services that you need. Their staff offers high quality, loving, personal care to all of God's children whom they have the privilege of assisting. They've even partnered with local businesses to provide services that their own employees aren't specialized in, services like lawn care, home repairs, and therapy. Connections of Fairview Haven takes all of the worry out of daily living and empowers you to continue to live an abundant life your way. This program is servicing Livingston County, Iroquois County, Ford County, and McLean County, and they can start working with you or someone you love right now with as little as one phone call to Arla Wheeler at 815-692-6703. You can read more about Connections of Fairview Haven on their website, fairviewhaven.org. Connections of Fairview Haven. They're putting the gold back into the golden years.
You can either use your own skin tissue to make that reconstructed breast. If you have enough extra skin tissue, I wasn't a candidate for that option. I didn't have enough of my own skin tissue to spare, even though I have plenty. but it wasn't an option. So I was going to have to go an implant route.
And why was that a tough decision to make? I would think these would be flip-flopped. I would think the decision to get them removed would be extremely difficult. And then the decision to have reconstructive surgery would be the easy one. It's like, okay, we got to get these back. I don't know. You know?
Well, if cutting them off meant it would have the potential to save my life, easy for me.
Right.
Take them, cut them off. Do I want to undergo more surgeries, reconstructing something that I could very easily live without?
Right.
You don't need them to live your life.
You're painting it very clearly. I feel like a dummy.
No, don't feel that way. But you don't realize these things until you're in the middle of it, needing to make these decisions. Mm-hmm. I chose to go reconstruction. Not everybody makes that choice. I had a coworker at the time, and she had breast cancer. She survived also. She chose not to be reconstructed. And that was her personal choice. So, and every case is different. I mean, every case is different. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you decide to have the mastectomy on one side. Mm-hmm. And is that the decision? I mean, that's kind of going against what your doctor recommended, correct?
Well, he left it up to me completely. Okay. But he did recommend considering having the left removed just because there is no history of breast cancer in my family. Could it come back? Do you want to take this path again? Do you want to walk this walk again? Mm-hmm. No, I did not. So we reached out to my insurance company. The doctor's offices do all this, by the way, to have the pre-auth done for, excuse me, a double mastectomy. And they said no.
Your insurance company?
Yes.
Are you with a different insurance company now?
I am now, but not because of that.
Not because of that?
No.
Okay.
I don't have any control. The city provides our
our
medical insurance for us, our health insurance. So, but that was not a battle I was willing to cave on. I was adamant that I wanted a double mastectomy because I was going to do this journey one time. One and done for me. I was not going to walk this path again. And if we removed my left breast and found that it was cancer-free and they wanted me to pay for the removal of it, I'll pay for the rest of my life, but I would pay for it. As it turned out, they acquiesced, and I had a double mastectomy then on October 11th of 2017.
What does acquiesced mean? They paid for it?
Yeah, they gave in and said, fine.
Wow, way to go.
You can have this. We'll give this to you.
Awesome.
We'll take your left breast off for you.
Okay.
even though for the insurance company, there was absolutely no reason why they should have or have wanted to take it off. There was no cancer cells whatsoever on the MRI. There was no tumor. There was nothing. The left breast was not even mentioned in my mammogram report. But they said, okay, fine.
How did you get them to do that?
I don't know. I don't remember that. I just did not want to do it again. And so they said, fine. They agreed. And thankfully, because there was breast cancer cells in the left.
You're kidding me. Holy smokes.
There was. Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. That's heavy stuff right there. So you undergo a surgery to remove both breasts.
Yeah.
What's it like when you wake up from that? I mean, to put it bluntly, without any breasts, that's a feeling you haven't had for your entire life.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Honestly, I was kind of relieved. I was sad. I remember before the procedure, they wheel you down to like this holding area. Every surgical patient has their own room, and it's dimly lit, and you're the only patient in there, and nurses come in and out giving you any last minute medication or and I had already said goodbye to my family. And I was in this room, and the tears just started kind of falling from my eyes, both of my eyes. I wasn't sobbing, but I was afraid. I was afraid. I've never been under general before, and I was going to be a changed person at the end of the day. So when I woke up in my hospital room, I never remember recovery, ever. They wake you up in recovery room, but I don't ever remember the recovery room part. I just remember waking up back in my hospital room. My whole family was there. Everybody, my children, my brother, not Billy, not the one that was diagnosed with lung cancer, but my brother, Tommy,
the younger,
the baby. My girlfriend, Diane, she was there. We were all there. And Dr. Whelan came in, and he was very, very, very pleased with the outcome of the surgery. Everything went as planned. And he said, he did tell me that I have no tissue on my right side at all. I don't have a muscle anymore. It's just my chest wall and then my skin.
Holy crap. So you could you touch your chest and feel bone almost?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
So it's not like...
Even now I can in certain spots.
Wow.
It's just, there's no muscle, there's no tissue, there's no nothing.
I don't know what I was expecting. I thought it'd be like, you know, how a man, they have a pec, it's like, it's muscle there. Not the case for you. You have...
They had to remove it.
That's crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Because on mastectomy day, which was October 11th then, so it was September 5th, my tumor was 9.4 centimeters. On mastectomy day, October 11th, it was a full 10. So it had grown that much in about 30 days of time, a little less than 30 days of time. So it was aggressive. It was very aggressive. And he had to do what he had to do. He was in there and he took everything that he felt had to be taken. Mm-hmm. So I was not expecting drains. I had drains on both sides.
Drains. You mean literal just tubes that?
Mm-hmm. Tubes that came out of my armpits, and they had like bulbs at the end, clear bulbs at the end, so that fluid would collect in there instead of collecting in my body. Mm. So we would have to empty the drains into a measuring cup and then measure how much output I had. And then that ultimately determined how long I had to keep the drains in.
Okay. How long did you have to keep the drains in?
I think about a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
We are brought to you by Forest Edge Tree Service. If you have trees or tree stumps on your property that you want gone, go nowhere else but Livingston County's premier tree service provider, Forest Edge Tree Service. This winter has been tough on all of our trees, and it's definitely caused tons of lasting damage. All it takes now is a little strong wind to lead to downed trees, limbs, and power lines, potentially resulting in massive damage to your homes, cars, and properties. Face it, your yard is no place for looming dead or damaged trees. It's just a matter of time before one comes down, and whether by your choice or not. This is precisely why you need to be a responsible adult and hire the services of Forest Edge Tree Service. Simply give Joe Rudin a call or text at 815-615-3037 to get a free quote today and prevent the property damage, financial distress, and all the other bad stuff that comes with unplanned down trees. Take care of the problem before it's a problem. Forest Edge Tree Service is staffed with trained professionals who use cutting-edge equipment to get the job done right every time. But if somehow, by some one-in-a-million chance, something went wrong, they are fully insured, so hiring their services is truly risk-free. These experienced pros take pride in their attention to detail, in their cleanup, and in their relationships with customers, which is why they are Livingston County's premier tree service provider. Keep your family, pets, vehicles, and neighbors safe, and save yourself a world of headaches when you call or text Forest Edge Tree Service at 815-615-3037 to get those dangerous, looming, dead, troublesome accidents waiting to happen off of your property. That's Forest Edge Tree Service. Call or text them at 815-615-3037. So you wake up from that, and I'm sorry to keep harping on this whole idea because I put myself in that situation. I would be shocked to see, if I was a woman, my breasts gone. Like, I mean, at some point you look down probably immediately and you see there's nothing there all of a sudden. Was that freaky at all to you? Or is it just like, it's whatever.
I was kind of, okay, good. Okay,
good.
We move on. Mm-hmm. What's the next step? Let's go.
Yeah.
Because when I started this journey, I had a doctor, Dr. Winger, right? My general practitioner. Mm-hmm. Now I had Dr. Winger, Dr. Wieland, Dr. Migas. Mm-hmm. I didn't know yet that I was going to have an radiation oncologist. And then I had a plastic surgeon. So you have all these doctors. It's like, okay, what's the next step?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Get this done.
So the next thing is they examine the breast tissue from the left breast that you didn't initially have to get removed, but you did.
Yeah.
How soon after the surgery did you find out that there was cancer in that left side?
So Dr. Wieland, when he called me to give me the results, it was on a Saturday morning. He had sent the breast tissue to Bloomington Path Labs, I guess. They came back with the DCIS diagnosis only. He was shocked. So he sent the tissue off to Mayo Clinic because he still did not believe that that's what it was. He was mm-hmm. still positive that it was going to be something more than that. But he said Mayo Clinic confirmed that it's DCIS. So now you move on to oncology. And you're good with us. You don't have to do anything else with us. But then he told me, he said, there were breast cancer cells in the left side, so you made a good choice.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
If you didn't choose to have that left side removed, you would have eventually, right? And you would have had to
at some point in time, yes. Because cancer cells don't go away. Mm-hmm. They multiply. and they migrate and they move around. And the another good part about my diagnosis was they checked a lot of my lymph nodes. Like they took 10, actually on the right side, I think they took 17 lymph nodes, which is a ton of lymph nodes. Yeah. And from the left side, they took 10, all clean. So the breast, the cancer cells were not in my lymphatic system. They were not going from head to toe. They were contained in the breast tissue. I was really fortunate.
Which is why it's so important to examine yourself and catch this as early as possible, because like you said, it just continues to multiply.
Yep.
It's just a matter of time a lot of the times before it spreads.
Yeah.
So cut it off, literally, I guess.
Yes.
Cut it off before it spreads.
Exactly.
Before it's a huge problem.
Exactly.
Okay. So boom, you got both removed. You got those results. You learned that it was there were cancer cells on the left side.
Yes.
Just like you said, what happens next?
So next, you know, chemo then was off the table, right? Chemo, I did not have to have chemo because it wasn't in my lymphatic system. Cancer cells were not going throughout my body that chemo needed to kill.
So no chemo means no hair loss, right?
Correct.
That had to be a relief for you, right?
That was a relief. Mm-hmm. So then the decision had to be made, do I really need radiation, right? Along with all these different doctors that you have, they all have their own special area of expertise. So a general surgeon, his area of expertise is, I did a great job on the surgery. I got all the tissue. He removed my muscle. I don't have anything left. It went down to the chest wall. The only thing on top of my chest wall is my own epidermis. It's my own skin. So he was absolutely confident. He said, radiation? I don't really feel like you need radiation. I feel like everything was contained in what we removed. Mm-hmm. But then you go to the cancer center to meet with my medical oncologist and the radiation oncologist, their area of expertise is cancer. And so when I told Dr. Migas that I had pretty much decided not to go the radiation route, he said, okay, I need to tell you to reconsider, and here's why. He said, you know, medical technology nowadays is such that they can do a lot of things for a lot of people and can save a lot of lives. But with having no clear margins in my situation, he cannot remove a chest wall and expect me to live. So if there was even one cancer cell that penetrated my chest wall, that has to be killed by radiation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I said, I guess I'll have radiation. So then Lindsay and I met with Dr. Woodhouse, my radiation oncologist, and got set up for that. And I have to be honest, she was a little brutal in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But I love that woman.
Brutal in what way?
Very direct, very... she would just study my paperwork, study my lab results, study my incisions, because now I have these incisions. Didn't hardly say two words to us, and she's just on her computer and she's typing away. And and then she turned to me and she said, okay, your DCIS nuclear grade 3 diagnosis requires you to have 33 rounds of radiation, and we will start on this day and this day and this day. And I was just like, oh.
So not an ounce of emotional support?
No, nothing, nothing. And Lindsay and I left that appointment a little deflated. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't sure if that was going to be a good fit or not. And at that point, it actually made me step back a little bit and reconsider having radiation. But I kept going back to Dr. Migas's words on people just can't live yet without a chest wall. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they you just can't. The rib cage could fall out, and, you know, it's just not pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah. So went back and started my radiation.
I mean, I hear radiation is not exactly fun.
I mean, the process itself is easy.
Okay.
The process itself is easy. It was only on my right side that I had to have radiation. But they formed this huge styrofoam kind of pillow thing. I had to always put my arm up over my head so that they could get a clear shot of mm-hmm. the area that needed to be radiated. And that was the position I assumed every day. It doesn't hurt at all. You feel nothing, but it can burn your skin at times, depending on how much radiation you have. And it did. It burned my skin really bad. The bad thing about radiation is it's consecutive. So for 33 days in a row, except for Saturday and Sunday, I went to the cancer center at 8 a.m. to have my radiation. Mm. It's only about a 15-minute process once you're in the radiation room. Mm. You have to go every day. So it was every day for like 6 weeks. And I had already been off work, you know, with the surgery. And you have a job and, you know, yeah. people rely on you. And now fellow employees have to pick up the slack. But I tried to make it up to them a little bit because on Wednesdays it was doctor day, which meant my visits went longer. And so I would bring lunch back to City Hall for everybody.
Oh, that's nice.
The least I could do, right?
Well, then, so how soon after that, you did eventually undergo reconstructive surgery?
I've already started that in the process.
Oh, while you're doing the radiation?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I didn't yes. realize that.
Yeah. So my double mastectomy was in October, on October 11th. The expanders, they're called expanders. They are pouches about so big. They're kind of squarish. And they have like a metal plug at the top of them. They were placed under my skin November 30th. So, and I hadn't started radiation yet. I didn't start radiation until March sometime. Once those expanders were placed, then I would visit my plastic surgeon like every 5 weeks or every 6 weeks, and he would inject saline into the expanders to stretch my skin.
That's very interesting. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
They were placed November 30th, and then I started radiation in March. So he had to overfill my right side because I was going to have this radiation and skin was going to get damaged, and he was going to need enough skin to complete reconstruction. So it was insane how full this expander was. It was like a balloon on my chest on the right side. And so the left side had to be decreased because the right side was filled so full.
It was taking all the skin or
something?
It
was taking all the space. It was taking all the space. Dr. Woodhouse examined me and she's like, you need to go back to Dr. Allen and have him reduce that left side. I can't even get the radiation beam in there.
What in the world? This is, yeah, okay, I'm glad you're laughing because it's kind of funny.
It is funny. It is funny.
So what, did you just walk around with your right boob way bigger than your left?
Yep.
Did people notice?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, I didn't care. Initially, I mean, at City Hall, I was a little uncomfortable initially. Uh-huh. Not around my coworkers. They all knew what was going on, and they were all very incredibly supportive. I have had the best team ever during this. The best counsel. I was so blessed and so lucky to have those people in my corner in my life at that time. It was the public that I was embarrassed by when they would come in, because you don't know who knows. It's not like you wear a sign that says, oh, I'm undergoing reconstruction for breast cancer, and that's why the one side is so much bigger. But that only lasted like a day or two.
Oh, okay.
And got over it right away.
It seems like City Hall in Fairbury, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like a tight-knit community. I remember I worked at the pool, and it seems like you guys were almost all friends, or at least all, you knew everything that was going on in each other's lives yeah. and stuff.
Well, and it's just like any other job, right? You spend the majority of your time With who? With your coworkers.
Right.
So we do become close, and we were very close. Stephanie and Jan, I miss them terribly. but they were rock stars for me.
Okay. And so you get that sorted out. You kind of finish up radiation, correct?
Yep. I do my radiation.
And then after that, are you cancer-free? Are these treatments and all this stuff over?
Yes. So I had my 33 rounds of radiation, and I rang the bell, like you see people ringing the bell at the cancer center. I rang that bell on April 23rd, 2018. And that is my cancer-free birthday. Yeah. Wow. Just past my three-year mark of cancer-free this past April. And that was an emotional day for me. I wasn't expecting that to be emotional. But I rang that bell and got in my car and was driving back to City Hall. And I just started bawling like a baby. I really did. It was like, I'm at the end of this. And I only have reconstruction to go. And then I'm done. Then I'm done. So, and when I when I got back to City Hall that day, there were balloons tied to my chair, and Jan and Steph and Brett, they were all just cheering me on and congratulating me, and it was a great day.
That's an amazing day.
It was an amazing day. Yes.
We are brought to you by The Coffee Steamer. The Coffee Steamer is Livingston County's premier coffee joint. Their trailer in Fairbury boasts delicious and decadent coffee drinks, teas, and smoothies, while their full-service cafe in Forest has all that, plus tons of incredible baked goods, sandwiches, and salads. Life is too short to drink bad coffee, so head on over to The Coffee Steamer and start your mornings off right. That's The Coffee Steamer in Fairbury and Forest, Illinois.
Before the emotions just go totally positive, I've got to ask.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that your brother during this all also was diagnosed with lung cancer. You were very concerned about your younger brother. What happened there during all this? Because this is over the span of what, a year and a half or so?
Yeah. Billy was actually doing really well with his treatments. He was doctoring at Northwestern. He was undergoing immunotherapy and not chemotherapy, did well with it, did not lose his hair, did not really get sick from the immunotherapy. He had radiation. I think he had like six rounds of radiation, did really well with that, and things were going well. My younger brother, Tommy, came down for my double mastectomy surgery. I ended up having like nine total surgeries, and he would get angry when I wouldn't tell him when I had a surgery coming up. And I'm like, Tom, this is old hat now. You just go to work every day and I'll be fine. But he was here for the big ones. He would drive down the night before and spend the night and get up with us at 4 o'clock in the morning to be at St. Joe's by five. And so things, they were doing well.
Well, then what happened with your brother then?
I mean, stage four lung cancer diagnosis is a major diagnosis. That's a big one. There were two episodes prior to the day he passed where we did not think he was going to live. The one time we met with everybody at the hospital to make his final arrangements, and my sister-in-law was waiting for my brother's son, Dylan, who lives in Salem, to get to the hospital so that Dylan could say goodbye to his dad before we unplugged him.
Oh, my gosh.
That was on a Friday. And Dylan didn't end up getting there until like 7 o'clock that night. And Debbie just said, let's just wait till the morning. We'll come back in the morning and we'll go from there. And we all said, that's fine, your decision. We're on board. And Tommy called me Saturday morning and he's like, have you heard from Debbie yet? And I said, no, not yet. And he said, well, Billy's up and talking.
Holy crap.
I said, what?
Are you kidding me?
No.
They were about to pull the plug the night before?
Yeah. And he was up and talking on Saturday. And it was like that twice. Both times he was hospitalized, he had these episodes. I don't really know what kind of episode they were, but he would be super near death and then he would be alive and live.
Oh, my word.
So on the day he passed, it was in January of 2019. Lindsay and I were actually in Nashville with our family from Lockport celebrating my niece's 21st birthday. And 2019, if you remember, was a horrible year for snowfall and ice. And Tommy had called that Saturday morning and he had just gone to Billy's house to plow for him and went inside and found Billy unresponsive on the floor in his bedroom.
Oh my gosh. So not in the hospital or anything.
No. And Debbie, his wife, my brother's, my sister-in-law, she, I believe, was at the dentist that morning. She left the house at like 7 to go to the dentist and Billy was still in bed. And so when Tommy got there, Debbie wasn't home yet and Tommy found Billy. And so he was unresponsive, but Debbie chose to have him placed on a ventilator to allow the family some time together. I told Lindsay, pack your bags, we have to go home. And the roads were awful. It was that snowstorm that shut down 57. Mm-hmm. I mean, roads were closed. There were so much ice on the roadways. And he said, you have to stay in Nashville. You can't come home right now. You have to stay. And I said, okay. So we didn't end up leaving until Sunday morning. And it was a horrendous ride on Sunday morning. Terrible ride.
Like and, just icy and
oh my gosh, yes. Yes, the ice was awful. Awful. It was so thick on 57 and turned around Monday morning and went up to Silver Cross Hospital in Joliet. And Stevie went with me that day. And Debbie, we unplugged Billy that night and he went home.
That was a dramatic series of events for him, though.
I mean, it was.
And that shortly followed the dramatic events in your own life, too.
Yeah.
Crazy couple years there.
It was. Yes, it was. Jordan fell off a roof that year also. Jordan Roy, Lindsay's boyfriend. So diagnosis in September, mastectomy in October, expanders placed in November. Jordan fell December 17th or 18th and was basically paralyzed for, I mean, they didn't even know. He was in the ICU for like 2 weeks and a 9-hour surgery for him. It was unreal. The events that my family had gone through from May of 2017 until really 2019 after my brother passed. Mm-hmm. They didn't stop. It was like one traumatic event after another.
Yeah. Well, so was your brother passing, was that kind of like the end mark, the finish line of that craziness?
Yeah, pretty much. I had a hard time with that event. Number one, because he wasn't on the planet anymore.
Right.
And number two, why am I still here and he's not here? Mm-hmm. And they call that survivor's guilt, I guess.
Yeah.
I've learned. So I had a hard time with that because I'm the oldest. Mm-hmm. And those are my little brothers. I should go. I'm the oldest. That's my responsibility. I should go. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't God's plan. And
right.
It was different.
Absolutely. So, the funny thing, you know, the only guarantee we have in life is death. People always say death and taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
yeah.
I mean, everyone goes. Everyone goes. It's not on our time. We don't exactly choose when that is.
Right.
So like people will go. People will go before their older siblings sometimes and before their parents even sometimes. And it's just, it's unfortunate for us here on Earth, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's just like in God's eyes, what's it really matter?
That's how it is. I mean, we have no control. I do believe, our days are predetermined by God. And when that day comes, it won't be a surprise to him.
Exactly. Won't be a surprise to him at all. However, it can a lot of people on this planet might not be ready, which is why it's a good idea to kind of always be ready.
Absolutely.
Wake up every morning like, hey, you know, this might be your last.
That's
this
right.
This might be their last.
Right. I tell my kids, you know, don't let anybody steal your sunshine. I mean, make today a great day. It's an awesome day. Mm-hmm. We're here, you know. We have another opportunity to live our lives, and that's our responsibility to do the best that we can with that opportunity.
We are brought to you by Pope Joy Plumbing, Heating, Electric, and Geothermal. Pope Joy offers a full array of services that ensure that all of your home or business utilities will continue to operate at peak performance for many years to come. The Pope Joy name has been servicing commercial and residential customers throughout Central Illinois since 1984, and they've earned a stellar reputation both in the community and online, boasting hundreds of five-star reviews on Google. At Pope Joy, their elite level team works hard to ensure that your homes and businesses remain comfortable, healthy, and energy efficient 24/7, which is why their phone lines are always open 24/7 as well. Pope Joy's comfort advisors and technicians also participate in ongoing factory-sponsored training classes all the time, so they understand the very latest installation and repair techniques. So for top quality plumbing, heating, electric, and geothermal services, call Pope Joy at 815-496-5181. Pope Joy Plumbing, Heating, Electric, and Geothermal. Did this experience change your perspective on life a little bit? Did it change maybe your priorities and what you value most in your day-to-day life or anything?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I used to be kind of like, not a perfectionist, but things had a place. I wanted everything in its place, and the small stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think everybody has read Don't Sweat the Small Stuff somewhere. Well, I did. I just really did. And it would bother me if the small stuff wasn't done. My house used to be perfect.
I remember this. I used to go to your house all the time, spend the night there. I was like, this place is immaculate.
Yeah, it used
no
to be that
anything.
Way, right? Yeah, I mean, you could eat off my floors.
Yeah.
And that's how it was. And if you come to my house now, look high and step high, because this is where I live, and life is not all about cleaning. And
right.
You know,
those
things that don't matter, it's family. Family is what matters, and giving back in some way is what matters now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And throughout this whole experience, to what can you credit your mental health not leaving you altogether? Because these were incredibly trying times for you, mentally taxing like you wouldn't believe, like most of us haven't experienced. What reasons can you give, like I said, for your mental health not leaving you, for you not losing it?
I've always been a more optimistic person than pessimistic. And I love laughing. I mean, laughing is my favorite thing. But I also work hard at pretty much everything I do. And so it was a job. I have this job to do. I have to do this. Like, these are the tasks in front of me, and I have to do everything that I have to do to finish these tasks. And there were times when I thought, how is this going to be a good ending? You know, not just me, but Jordan, you know, when Jordan fell, and my brother, and all these different things compounding on top of each other. It's like, where is the end, and how is this going to be a good thing? Right. And I would have some boohoo moments. I would give myself, you know, a day. Okay,
absolutely.
Now it's day two. Put your big girl panties on, sister, and get back at it. I wouldn't ever want my children to quit. So I can't quit.
Yeah.
I have to lead by example.
Right. And so, I think what you said there was, it was simple, but it's beautiful at the same time, because yes, give yourself a day, let yourself boohoo for a little bit. Key words, little bit.
Little bit.
And then you like you said, put your big girl panties on,
yeah,
and keep moving forward.
And get back at it.
Give yourself a little time, but don't harp on it too long. You know, it's all about balance.
Yes, because there, you know, you start going dark, and dark is a terrible place to be. And it takes a whole lot more time and effort to pull yourself out of that dark place. Give yourself a day, 2 days. Whatever your boundary is, whatever your limit is, and then get right back at it.
I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, you give it more than a couple days, that's when you start going into the darkness. Yep. And that's when you, it's important that you...
That's a dangerous place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
We've all heard the things, when it comes to cancer, there's a lot of slogans and phrases that we hear that go along with it. You know, we wear pink in solidarity with cancer victims, cancer survivors. You see the ribbons. You hear about people fighting against cancer all the time. What was the biggest fight for you? What was the most difficult aspect of this, the most taxing part of your whole experience in your fight against cancer?
The initial diagnosis.
Dealing with that.
Absorbing that and hearing that and realizing what that meant going forward, because what is it? It's the unknown. I'm afraid of the unknown, I guess. You know, it's easy to stay in a situation because it's comfortable. You know what to expect. But the unknown is scary. You don't know what it's going to bring. I think the hardest day in all of it was diagnosis day. And then having to tell your loved ones, and there's a lot that goes into the diagnosis day.
Yeah. So last thing here, 1 in 8 women will learn that they have breast cancer at some point in their life. They will be diagnosed with breast cancer. That being said, you've been through it. You've gained a lot of wisdom and a lot of experience. What advice or wisdom could you give to someone who does, maybe will, God forbid, but to all the women that will be in the same situation that you were in the doctor's office, learning that they have breast cancer, what advice can you maybe give to them to just remember to keep in mind that might help them in their experience, in their journey, I should say?
Take a pen and paper with you. You think you're going to remember everything. How could you forget, right? You forget. You do forget. I talked earlier about having all these doctors now, and they all have their special areas of expertise and specialties. You have to ultimately make that decision for yourself. You and your family have to sit down, look at the pros and cons, weigh your options, and make a decision. You cannot, and I did learn this. You cannot let the influence of others mold your decision. It has to be your own decision. Yeah. And then have faith, pray, eat healthy, get a lot of rest, and love your family. Surround yourself with your family.
That's great.
That's all I got.
Nancy Woodlackey, this has been a phenomenal conversation. Thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on being 3 years cancer-free now.
3 years, yes. 3 years cancer-free. Thank you. And you're welcome.
Absolutely. All right. That's a wrap.
Thank you, Paul.
So much, Nancy.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Paul Garcia Show. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe on YouTube or like us on Facebook. If you would like to contribute to the production of this show financially, you can do so by becoming a patron on patreon.com/Paul Garcia or by donating on Venmo to The Paul Garcia Show. Until next Sunday, I'm Paul Garcia. Thanks for listening to The Paul Garcia Show. God bless and have a great week.